Spring signals the start of wine festival season on the Central Coast, which extends really all the way through the crush in the fall. Nowadays, there are wine events for just about every location, occasion, civic group, food group, you name it, and cause. The big granddaddy of wine events, though, is the Paso Robles Wine Festival, now in its 32nd year, with 4 days of activities starting tomorrow and running through this Sunday. Chris Taranto is the go-to man for all things wine in North County, San Luis Obispo. He is the communications director for the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance and joins us in studio today for some insight into the upcoming season, the drought situation, and the rapidly expanding Paso wine industry. Welcome to Issues and Ideas, Chris.
Hey, Randall. Pleasure to be here.
How do you go about keeping a wine event fresh? There are so many years of doing it, and considering that locals have so many options from which to choose.
That's a fantastic question, because there are oftentimes in our circles that we say, wow, there's something going on every weekend. And so how is it that we're not... if anything, you know, stealing market share from one another, because that very well can happen. I mean, we just recently had the Paso Cab Collective. We also had the Earth Day Festival happen. You know, our festival, the 32nd annual Paso Robles Wine Festival, is coming up here pretty soon. And how do all of these festivals still stay fresh and alive and relevant to the consumer? And so it's our job to kind of try to figure out how we can stay fresh and still attract that local. For us in particular, earlier when tickets first went on sale, we did a locals only pass. And it was heavily discounted, of course. It lasted a short amount of time to hopefully attract those locals. Mm-hmm. But also, it's just simply a matter of refreshing what it is that you're doing. For the wine festival this year, you know, we're doing a lot of more education, because we see not just the local, but the wine consumer in general, they want to learn a lot more about what it is that they're tasting.
Yeah, so how is the education aspect being presented? Are we talking classes, seminars, that sort of thing?
So we open the festival on Saturday, May 17th at 10:30 a.m. with a seated seminar where we'll have six of our winemakers each showcasing one wine to an audience of 60 people to educate them on basically Paso Robles in general, and those six wines that are all going to be different. So there's not two Cabernet Sauvignons or two Syrahs. They'll all be different. And so it's almost like a little journey through Paso Robles and what makes our growing environment so unique, told through those wines and through the experiences of those winemakers. And so then it helps people kind of understand, oh, okay, I get it. Okay, Paso can do a lot of things. Here's why. It's not just all about Cabernet Sauvignon or about, you know, Syrah or Chardonnay or Sauvignon Blanc for that matter. It's a little bit of everything, but there's a method to the madness, if you will. And that's how we share that. But then in the park throughout the day on May 17th, we'll have what's called pop-up educational tastings. And so then we'll, in our special tent that we'll do this, and it'll be kind of like a standing seminar where then a couple winemakers may come in and pour some rosés and then talk about what rosé really is, because, you know, it's pink wine, but how did it get pink? And what goes into it, and why are some sweet and some not? And so I think this will be a really fun way for people to get a better understanding of pink wine. And then we're going to even talk about wine and beer collaboratives and how that works. And then another one, our final one on the pop-up tastings, is going to be wines that are a little difficult to pronounce. They're kind of like those obscure varieties, and why it's kind of fun to discover those. And we'll have some winemakers in there talking about that.
We're speaking with Chris Taranto. He's the communications director for the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance, here to talk about the 32nd annual Paso Robles Wine Festival, but we're throwing him some other questions regarding the Paso Robles wine region as well. And Chris, it seems like travel, food, and wine publications are really falling over themselves lately to write glowing articles about Paso Robles as the up-and-coming wine region, like it's someplace new. But it seems to me more of a case like it took many, many decades for the region to become an overnight success.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, our AVA, American Viticultural Area, was established in 1983. Napa, I believe, was 82. when it was defined as an AVA, of course, with the boundaries and everything. However, they have a jump start on us as far as legacy is concerned, with so much history. And so that's kind of why we're considered this up and coming, if you will, because when you leave our area and you say, I'm from wine country in California, and you can be in the Midwest or somewhere back east, they're going to instantly say, oh, we're in Napa, until you say, well, Paso Robles. And then hopefully they're not saying, oh, where's Paso? Is that in Texas? Or is that, you know, they're hopefully putting it together, but it's not there yet. And so I think that's why so many people consider us this up and coming. However, when we were nominated for the Wine Region of the Year by wine enthusiasts last year, and we're amongst those of like Rias Baixas or Stellenbosch and a few others, that really sets a new tone for how Paso Robles is considered. I mean, we're basically being put on the world stage with these other great wine growing regions, and so when elements like that happen, that's really saying like, okay, maybe we're not so up and coming anymore, although there's still a lot of work to be done. I love seeing those articles out there. I mean, that's my job, is to hopefully get that kind of press attention for Paso Robles. But it shows that something is working.
There are a record number of proposed hotel and resort properties in front of the planning department in Paso Robles. We did a story on that recently. And some local wineries are being bought out by much larger global wine conglomerates. Is Paso in any danger of losing its small-town charm?
I say no. I say that we are not in danger of that. And here's why. The majority, the greatest majority of the wineries in Paso are boutique. They're 5,000 case and below, many of them even well below 5,000 cases. And it's a living for those people. And by no means are they running around in any way, shape, or form in an extravagant nature. They're just, in essence, people who have a passion to develop and create something that others can enjoy, just like an artist, just like a musician or whatever. And so I think that with the majority of them being that small, and that small of a winery in general would not necessarily be all that equitable for a larger corporation to purchase. Now, those that grow and those that continue to grow, and maybe in that is their business plan, that could be also their exit plan for all we know. But luckily in our region, believe it or not, there's really only about three truly corporately owned wineries in Paso.
I can't let you go without asking you about water. Is there room for growth still in the Paso region as far as more wineries? Like, is it just sustainably, could it happen? Like, can we add more wineries?
Well, I think that's a great question, because it's a lot about education, because there is approximately 50% of the grape product that is grown in Paso, and it's just not out of the basin. That's a very finite basic area that we're discussing, but rather the entirety of the viticultural area of Paso, the growing region. 50% of it actually leaves Paso Robles, goes to wineries maybe out in the valley or maybe even up north as bulk grape juice or as actual grape product. Some of that fruit is amazingly excellent, and it's going into some very fine products out of the area that still put Paso on the label. Others might just go into, you know, a greater bin of collective fruit and becomes a California appellate wine for somebody. And so the growth, though, that is happening is kind of out of that fruit. It's not necessarily, now while there are new plantings here, there, and everywhere, and I'm definitely not an authority on exactly where new plantings are, but there are, they do exist out there, some in the basin, a lot outside of the basin. But the growth that we're seeing when you have like a new winery sprout up, that is likely them finding some fruit. It's existing. It's not being planted anew. You got to imagine that these guys who are the young guys, you know, they're by no means do they have the capital to be able to invest and create a vineyard and create something from scratch. So that's where this kind of growth from a capital investment point of view just really isn't happening as much anymore. Now, as far as growth is concerned by any of the bigger guys or what have you, that I'm, like I said, not entirely certain, nor am I an authority on that, really. But they are all, in a way, working towards that common ground to be able to continue to have their businesses be sustainable, of course. And I sure hope that, as you know, clearer minds prevail, they do come to solutions. And I sure hope that Mother Nature brings us more wet weather.
Yeah. Know? And let's talk about that emergency at hand. What are vintners doing to deal with this situation right now? Are some of them just sort of writing off the year or just taking a portion of their crop and, you know, making sure that that gets enough water? Or how's that working?
That's a good way of kind of putting it, a portion of the crop, because, okay, so once again, not all wineries are vineyards and not all vineyards are wineries. And so what you have is, from a grower's perspective, a lot of care has to be taken this year in order to manage that vineyard. So it basically can survive. And by no means do we want plump fruit. Okay, so water in general is typically, there's something called deficit irrigation that happens in our vineyards, where basically what they're doing is they're giving it just enough water to help the plant continue on its survival path. But really you want to stress the vine and get that vine to dig down deep. Because if you grow anything at home and you water it, the roots are going to stay shallow. That's not sustainable for a vineyard. A vineyard should not have shallow roots. Then it's just, it's not digging deep. It's not gaining its nutrients from the earth. And then it's also losing that sense of place that we all love about wine. And so by training those vines to go deeper and to find their own water sources, so many vineyards are dry farmed in Paso Robles. And so that's a testament to the fact that vines can find their own water. They do not need necessarily human involvement. However, it all depends on the piece of land that they're grown on. So there's so many determining factors that exist that this conversation is probably too simplistic, if anything, to give it any justice. But when you have a situation like we do this year, you're going to find a lot of vineyard managers are going to be dropping fruit, meaning they're doing like what's called a green harvest. And so they're taking fruit that could very well be produced in any normal year, and they're dropping it. And so each vine may produce a little less fruit. What does that do? Well, obviously, it's going to put a lot less stress on the vine. So it doesn't need as much to be able to produce a good, at least some sort of a good grape product. And so many other things about how you treat the soil around the plants themselves. I mean, that's going on right now. And just all of that care can go in now and throughout the growing season to ensure that that vine survives, but then also that kind of helps keep that piece of land sustainable.
Chris Toronto, Communications Director for the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance at PasoWine.com. That's where you can find details about this weekend's 32nd annual Paso Robles Wine Festival. Thank you for being on Issues and Ideas.
Thanks, Randall. It was great to be here.
For Issues and Ideas, I'm Randall White, KCBX News.